ask you this. Let me ask you this.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Sports Central. Chicago Sports Conversation with Adam Hogue.
Go, go, go.
This is Sports Central. On demand and streaming live on WGNRadio.com.
Welcome in. This is Sports Central, Thursday, February 8th, 2018. And it is NBA trade deadline day. We are, as we record and do this live right now, 57 minutes away from the actual deadline. But there's been a ton of action so far, especially with the Cleveland Cavaliers, who apparently by the end of the day are going to have a completely new team other than LeBron James. They have traded Isaiah Thomas to Los Angeles, to the Lakers. And what was your favorite part of the Isaiah Thomas Cleveland era? I mean, that really did not go well. That Kyrie Irving trade looks horrendous.
Did he get traded because of the Boston Celtics thing,
the LeBron James not liking him thing?
Yeah, that was one thing. Yeah.
Dwayne Wade traded. Derrick Rose traded. Everybody traded from the Cleveland Cavaliers. I mean, this is crazy. So the biggest one, though, Isaiah Thomas, Channing Frye, and the Cavaliers 2018 first round draft pick going to the Lakers for Jordan Clarkson, who's a decent player, and Larry Nance Jr.,
who's a decent dunker.
Potentially related to Jim Nance. It's the only thing I know about him. Probably not. All right. Now, if I'm looking at this trade, right, by the way, Mark Harmon's going to join us here momentarily. 312-235-2525 is the number if you'd like to chime in on the trade deadline. And we'll get you the Bulls' perspective of this, too. They did make a trade. Jameer Nelson. Great Bull. All-time Bull. Gone.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that they traded for him. He was already on their team?
Yeah, he was on the team for like 5 days.
Ah.
Yeah. And then now he's gone.
Am I calling Carm?
I don't know. Carm's texting me right now, so why don't you get in contact with him? Here's my favorite thing about Carm. Carm, this is the second day in a row he has texted me right at 1 o'clock. Mark Carman, we love him. And that's all I'll say. Mark Carman. He'll join us here shortly to talk about he knows the NBA, and I want to get his thoughts on everything that's going, but, man. Mark Carman. Alrighty. Dwayne Wade. Basically, with Clarkson coming in, playing time going down, they send him back to Miami. So Dwayne Wade goes to Miami for a second round draft pick. And then Derrick Rose heads to Utah in a trade, which is basically a salary dump. They're expected to release him. And he's probably going to sign with Minnesota, is what it sounds like. Reunite with Tom Thibodeau. So those good times with Jimmy Butler and Derrick Rose, hopefully any of that friction is now gone. Let's look at this from a Bulls perspective before we bring Carm in. Obviously, the Jameer Nelson thing's not a big deal. We'll see if the Bulls make a bigger trade by the end of the day. Robin Lopez, maybe. It doesn't sound like anything's cooking, but we'll see how this all shakes out. I'm pretty sure that a lot of teams are kind of scrambling right now. But let's jump in right with our lead.
I think there could be a volume of deals today. I don't know that there's going to be an impactful volume. I don't know that we're going to see guys moving who are going to impact the playoffs, kind of really affect the balance of power.
Adrian Wojnarowski from ESPN. Before all of this went down, obviously. But, you know, what he said there is actually still kind of accurate. I'm not sure anything has changed the huge balance of power in the NBA. I think this has longer-term impacts. The ironic thing about the Cavs making this trade with L.A. is you look at the guys L.A.'s taking on, their free agents. I think it frees up more room to sign LeBron James in the offseason. So do the Cavs just help the Lakers get LeBron? I think that's a fair question to ask. We'll ask Mark Carmen that in a second. But I want to concentrate on the Bulls for a second. This just being the trade deadline, I think, is a good point to step back and look at what they've done since last summer. Lauri Markkanen, you got to like what he's done so far. Zach LaVine, pretty encouraging coming off the ACL. Chris Dunn, considering what he did last year in his rookie season, has been a great development and really has worked out as best as we probably thought for him in his first year in a new system with Fred Hoiberg. Unfortunately, he had that concussion and that weird spill to the ground on his own dunk, and the Bulls have clearly missed him, and that's led to this 7-game losing streak, but in a way that's kind of helping them too long term. And then they get a first-round pick for Mirotić. You know, I've been very, very critical of the Bulls for a long time and how they need to rebuild and how I really did not trust Gar Forman and John Paxson to rebuild this thing. And it's still early, so we'll see, you know, how it all turns out. But it's hard to criticize the moves that they've made. To get a first-round pick for Mirotić, to get three guys in the Jimmy Butler trade that look like they're at least solid pieces going forward, I think you got to at least be encouraged here as a Bulls fan. We got Mark. He's ready. Hello, Mark Carmen. How are you, buddy?
Adam Hulk, how are you? I'm sitting here with Hunter Armour. We're talking about how amazing you were at the Super Bowl, just so you know.
Oh, thank you. I miss being on roller coasters with you, too.
It was nothing better than riding a roller coaster with you and filming it, yes.
How sad were you when you had to get back, when you got back to Chicago and I wasn't there with you riding roller coasters?
Extremely sad until today when the NBA trade deadline came out and it was the greatest day in the history of sports.
Wow. Yeah. So sort this all out for me. What the heck is going on?
Okay, well, the Cleveland Cavaliers have just gone full on nuclear, right? So you got...
Are they really getting better, though? That's my question. I mean, they're making a lot of deals here, but are they really getting better?
I think they're better. I think you're... Well, it's going to take a second to put the chemistry together there, but they can't have worse than what they had. I mean, that team was beyond dysfunctional, so there's that. George Hill, who will in all likelihood be their starting point guard, is a better wing defender than anyone they had. So I think that's a nice add for him. Rodney Hood's a good young player, man. I mean, he's not elite, but that's a nice piece who can also shoot it. So you got a bunch of shooters around him. And I think the main thing with LeBron James is you don't want somebody who wants to dominate the basketball. And that's what they had in Isaiah Thomas, who needed the ball in his hands. And so now that clearly never worked, and he's in L.A. for God knows how long. But I think in theory, at least to me, the pieces look better. Now the other side of it is that you just opened up even more money. You helped the Lakers clear up cap space to get LeBron. But I how much can you worry about that if you're Cleveland? If LA is going to do that, they're going to do it. Period. So maybe you make the best deal that you can make.
Yeah, I just brought that up. I found that very interesting. That in a kind of a weird way, the Cavs may have just helped seal LeBron's exit, but. At the same time, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen anyway. But would there have been any possible way, if LeBron is intent on leaving, for them to have traded LeBron? I mean, I know he's got a no-trade clause, but would he ever have agreed to anything like that?
Well, and the other, he does have the no-trade, but the other side of that is when you really think about it, who's going to give anywhere close to fair value for LeBron when they're going to have him for 3 months?
Point. Yeah, good point.
You're not going to get. You can't. He's impossible to trade. No one's going to do anything close to what he'd be worth. So, I, in theory, though, I loved it. Like, hey, LeBron, are you staying? You're not. All right, we're going to deal you. But you're getting such pennies on the dollar there that it's just not worth it.
Hey, Joe Romano just told me Doug McDermott got traded to Dallas. Your thoughts?
Are you serious?
I love how you care about that. That's the greatest thing. It's like, really?
Hunter just popped up like LeBron just got traded. Doug McDermott to Dallas. Well, I just, I if there's one thing I appreciate in life more than anything else, it was being right. And Doug McDermott, when he came in late, I said that guy was going to smell, and he continues to smell. And now he's on his, what, eighth NBA team? From the Bulls, I can't even remember the deals now. He's been a Bull, he's been the Thunder, he's been a Knick, and now he's a Mavs. He's been on four teams. We're halfway to eight.
And that's all in like a year since the Bulls traded him.
I don't even dislike the guy anymore. Like, I think he's okay. But I used to argue with one Bulls personnel man a bit. He would say that McDermott's going to be better than Nico. And actually, that could, I guess, still be an argument, but I'm going to take Nico all day.
Well, Nico certainly got the Bulls more.
Nico reunion tour this Sunday in Milwaukee, by the way. They're playing the Pelicans and the Bucks. I'm thinking about going up there.
Yeah, you would go. What day is that?
Sunday, 3:30 tip.
Sorry.
Well, it might be Eastern. Maybe it's 2:30.
I'll be busy watching curling or something.
There you go. There you go.
Derrick Rose traded to Utah, probably headed to Minnesota after being cut.
Yeah, that's odd to me that Tibbs would bring him in when you've got the Jimmy Butler situation. But, I mean, I guess it's insurance if somebody gets hurt. And, you know, Jimmy and Derrick will get along just fine. And, you know, that's not exactly the way Derrick Rose drafted it up here. I'm going to go sign with Cleveland, try to win a title. Oh, you're going to trade me to Utah, and now I'm going to be released, and now I'm a Timberwolf. Pretty it's a significant exile for Derrick Rose these days, from the Bulls to the Knicks to the Cavs to Utah to Minnesota. You got to wonder if he's going to retire, right?
Yeah, that would just be so sad, but I mean, it's obvious he's never going to be the guy he once was or anything even close to that. I was just talking to Bill and Wendy about this. I mean, to me, it's still one of the saddest stories this city's ever seen.
It was a tremendous story and one of the best. And then it's too bad what happened, no doubt. It's almost Gale Sayers-like, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, could have been the greatest running back of all time, ends up playing 4.5 years before blowing out his knee. I mean, it's basically, I mean, Derek won an MVP and he had great years, but he'll always remember for being hurt. I'm still a D-Rose guy, though, as you know. D-Rose to the end, Hogue.
I know, you're probably wearing your number one jersey right now. this Jameer Nelson deal, I mean, what was your favorite moment of the Jameer Nelson Bulls era?
You know, it was great when Jameer looked at the Advocate Center and said, oh, I guess I'll never get to practice here. Or maybe he did practice once, I don't even know. But, you know, the Pistons, I kind of like what Detroit's doing from a very, you know, I guess, going to make the playoffs. Blake Griffin's showing up there and actually trying to put his best foot forward. Stan Van Gundy's a good coach. The Eastern Conference right now, I mean, who knows? You know, you got some crazy stuff could happen in the playoffs. Don't count out the Milwaukee Bucks, for the record. I think the Bucks could make a big-time push here now that Jason Kidd's out of the way, and they've been playing really good basketball, and Jabari's coming back. So who knows who comes out of the East this year? It's truly, I think, you can flip a coin. I'm still picking the Cavs, but that's a, you know, you're talking about 29 games to put that whole thing together.
When is Jabari supposed to be back? Because I like that Bucks team.
He's back. He's playing.
Okay.
Not a ton of minutes, but he's
so, you know, he's still working his way back.
Yeah, he's playing about, I think, 15 to 20 minutes a night. I've seen him have a 12-point night and maybe a 16-er. I forget exactly, but he's back out there. So the Bucks, you know, their record since Kidd left is maybe they've lost one game. They've been playing really well.
Yeah, and I think they're a scary team. Giannis is so fun to watch. So fun.
Well, they ruined Kristaps Porzingis the other night, which was too bad that Kristaps is no longer with us.
Well, and
for a year.
We're fortunate that Tim Hardaway Jr. is still with us because, I mean, he could have been killed on that dunk.
That's true. I think he is having some PTSD after that. Did you just knee me in the throat as you set your whatevers on my head?
Whatevers, yeah. Good way to put it. Okay, Derrick Rose, if he ends up with the Timberwolves are here tomorrow night. That just makes it even better. You got Jimmy Butler, Taj Gibson, Tom Thibodeau, Derrick Rose. It would just be a big Bulls party.
I forgot about that. I'm going tomorrow night. I forgot about the fact that D-Rose could actually be here tomorrow. That's awesome. I hope that happens.
Yeah. What are you looking forward to most about tomorrow night's game?
Joe, Jimmy back for the first time will be interesting. I'm sure he'll get a great ovation, but I first time seeing that. So that'll be, I suppose, moderately cool. And it's always fun to see Tibbs, man, right? Get Tibbs back in the building. Get a little standard Tom Thibodeau. Love that guy.
Tibbs was at the Super Bowl on Sunday.
I saw that. I'm bummed I missed him.
They put him on the Jumbotron for way too long, because you know how awkward he is. And he, like, sort of did the fakest smile I've ever seen. And then, like, he was hoping it would just be a second, but then they kept it on him. It was so awkward. It was so glorious, Tom Thibodeau.
Tibbs is the only Chicago coach that I've ever actually gotten to go to a concert with. Sat with Tibbs. It was a big moment for me, Hope.
You sat with Tibbs at a concert?
At the House of Blues in a box.
What did you guys see?
It was some blues guy, I have no idea, like Philly Johnny or something. Tibbs just sat there and was having a great time.
Wow. That's a good story. I like that. All right.
Those were the days. Those were the days.
Okay.
He wanted to talk. He loved talking sports. He wanted to talk baseball.
You know, he is a big sports fan. I think that's why he was at the Super Bowl. Other than, you know, the game being in Minnesota, he's really good friends with Bill Belichick.
Yeah, he's a big. He loves competition, the Tibby, and a little music every now and then, apparently.
Hmm. Yeah, him and Phil Emery. All right.
Yeah.
Thanks for jumping on, buddy. You're doing the whole show with me tomorrow, right?
I will see. Yes, sir. You're the man.
All right. We'll see you tomorrow. Hopefully, we both survive the snow. Mark Carmen from WGN Radio, our NBA Bulls expert. And we'll be talking a lot more Bulls tomorrow. The backside of the trade deadline. See what it all looks like. The big game against the Timberwolves tomorrow night. And that reunion there. We're going to take a quick timeout. Pat Fitzgerald joining us later on in the show. I want to have a conversation. Actually been trying to do this for a few days. And just trying to work it in. But I think it's important to have an intelligent, smart conversation about the catch, no catch rule in the NFL. And where this is going, because Roger Goodell kind of dropped a bombshell last week that they're going to look at this in the offseason. And I talked to somebody on Radio Row last week that had really good insight on this and maybe dropped some hints on really what the problems might be. So we will talk about that next. We'll take a quick time out here on Sports Central.
Yeah, welcome to WGN!
Chicago Sports Conversation. This is Sports Central with Adam Hogue.
In the NBA trade deadline today on Sports Central, and Casey Johnson just posted this story that Chris Dunn has been cleared from the concussion protocol. So that's good news. And practice for the second straight day on Thursday. So Chris Dunn could be back tomorrow night. I'm sure he wants to play against his former team at the United Center against the T-Wolves tomorrow night. They do have to work on his conditioning, though. That's also in the story. So maybe limited. Hopefully he plays tomorrow. And as we've learned, Derrick Rose could be with the T-Wolves tomorrow night, too. So we'll continue to follow the trade deadline. Last week, Roger Goodell mentioned in his kind of the state of the NFL press conference that he does at the Super Bowl that he's answering the fans' calls for clarity on the catch, no catch rule, the confusion about what's a catch and what's not a catch in the NFL. This has ballooned into such a big story that, I mean, it needs to be addressed. And I think that I just want to have an intelligent conversation about this on the show, both ideas and really what the problems are, why it exists in the first place, why the NFL put this, what originally was called the Calvin Johnson rule in, because of what happened at Soldier Field a few years ago. At least that's when the rule was first in the rule book and the first time we saw it, when Calvin Johnson's touchdown at Soldier Field was wiped out because he basically sort of put the ball on the ground while he was in the process of making a catch. It was ridiculous, but the Bears benefited from it. So anyway, Rich McKay, who is the president and CEO of the Atlanta Falcons, but also the head of the competition committee. The competition committee every offseason looks at the rules, presents them at the owners' meetings. They argue these rules, and they bring them to the owners to vote on. And when there are rule changes, it comes from the competition committee. And so Rich McKay is the head of that. He joined me on Radio Row last week, and we talked about the catch-no-catch situation. And at first, he kind of seemed like he didn't want to talk about it, but he actually gave really, really, really good insight on how they've looked at this the last few years, and it really, in his opinion, what the bigger problem is. Here's the conversation with Rich McKay.
We've looked at this rule a lot over the years, and I think what's happened is, as we've looked at it, we have allowed replay to begin to make us year over year tweak this rule and add language and all these things that are going to the ground and the ball can move slightly and initial contact with the ground. All that language add was not for the on-field official. The on-field official officiates this play very well. They know what it looks like to them. They know it's a clean catch, okay? So the clear possession, two-feeder body part, and an element of time. And they get it right. I mean, we have 17,000 passes a year.
Yeah.
So they get this right all the time. In replay, the problem is now you've got, 2K that's turned into 4K, that's going to turn into 16K, that's going to, you can see so much more. And we have allowed the adjustment of the rule to deal with that replay, and that's probably made the rule too complicated, okay? Okay, just not for the on-field official. He's still officiating it the same way he officiated it 20 years ago. He knows what he's seeing. He knows what a catch looks like to him and what doesn't. But in replay, when we can slow it down and we see the ball move and we see the ball juggle and we see them, then all of a sudden we're taking the catch away. So I think the commissioner makes a good point. Let's take a fresh look at this, right? Let's realize that replay is not going away, right? Because if we take replay away, that, the old saying would be, so everybody at home has got replay, but we don't have it in the stadium. That makes not a lot of sense. And let's not write this rule just for replay, but let's make sure that everybody understands on the field what a catch is and in replay what a catch is. Because today, I think on the field we understand it. I think it's in replay where we get a little confused.
Can you guys emphasize more of just, hey, it has to be completely 100% obvious to overturn a call? Because I used to be one of these guys that was like, all right, if you're going to have a replay, then let's get every single thing right. And then the more and more I look at this, like, and it goes what you just talked about. When you start talking about 4K and 8K, you can start looking at things, and human error is always a part of this, and a shadow, a ball might actually be a shadow or vice versa, and you get it wrong.
I'm 1,000% in favor of what you just said, not 500%. We put replay back in. We wrote a rule. I was on the committee. We wrote the rule. And, we had a standard, right, that, indisputable visual evidence. What did that mean? It meant Mike Holmgren coined the phrase in our meeting one day. He said it meant 50 drunks in a bar. We're looking at a TV and said, no, that's not right.
I like that.
Okay? And that, we need to always hold that standard. The problem we have is that you will get people that have this idea of, well, we should get everything right. We need to get every play right. No. Because right is in the eyes of the beholder. And with current technology, we can debate that forever. And so we don't want to put somebody's subjective judgment on top of an on-field official's, because all you're doing then is having two different people have subjective judgment. So I'm with you. The standard has to be, in our case, it's clear and obvious now. It has to be clear and obvious, which means that three of us sitting at this table have all agreed clearly that this play needs to be reversed. If it doesn't, we let it stand.
So what's the timeline on this? Owners' meetings in March?
We the Captains Committee, we do a lot of work, right? So we've got 2 days in New York next week. We go to Indy for 5 days. We go to Florida for 6 days. And that's where we do our report. Our report really is based on the teams. We do a survey, 32 teams. We probably get 90 responses because we ask various members members of the organizations, and that forms the basis of our agenda. But this rule will be one that I think we'll probably spend more time on in Indy, which is at the Combine, where we'll spend a lot of time understanding it, watching a lot of video. We meet with the union. We always, you know, the union has a lot of good perspective. Current players and retired players, they bring a lot of good perspective. So this will be something that ultimately you'll hear about in March when we get to the owners' meetings, but we worked on a lot before then.
So a number of different important parts of that conversation with Rich McKay. Looks like they're going to look, sounds like they're going to look at this hard at the NFL Combine with probably a vote coming at the owners' meetings a month later. So this is happening. I mean, very close. The Combine's in like 3 weeks, guys. And they need to look at this. They need to look at plays like Zach Miller's in New Orleans, which was, you didn't hear my question that started that conversation, but that's how it started. I brought up Zach Miller's catch, touchdown in New Orleans that they amazingly ruled not a touchdown. Which is why that conversation kind of drifted towards the replay side of it. So let's address that first. How replay is impacted. What I do think is a confusing rule and also needs to be addressed. I thought the catches in the Super Bowl the other night that got looked at closely, the two that went to replay, were handled perfectly. Both of them. But sitting there, I was worried they were both going to be overturned. Because, and I had a conversation that night after the game with David Chow, who is Pro Football Doc on Twitter. Maybe you've seen his work. He's always chiming in on injuries and does a phenomenal job just diagnosing these things off of video. So I've gotten to know him a little bit. We had a conversation after the game later that night. And he brought up a point to me, and I couldn't really argue with him on this. He thought the Corey Clement one should have been overturned because based on the standard the NFL has used this year, it's more like 51% sure that the ball bobbled. And you heard that conversation with Rich McKay. We need to get back to 100% certainty on these replays. Indisputable video evidence. 100 drunk guys in a bar. I love that part he brought up with Mike Holmgren in that story. But based on how this has been called throughout this season and past seasons too, but really this season more than anything with Al Riveron in that job back in New York, all over the map with these replay decisions, I can see why fans are going, well, hey, you called it this way all year. It looked like there was maybe a bobble, so overturn it. You're 51% sure there was a bobble. Not 100% sure, 51% sure. Why was it not called that way in the Super Bowl? I can't really argue with that. It's been like that all season. But that's why I think it's important for the owners and the league and the Players Association to get together this offseason and get this all worked out, both from the rule standpoint and the replay standpoint. 100% certainty. So let's get back to that play, Corey Clement in the end zone. There's a gray area between what is a bobble and what is a readjustment after you gain possession. So you catch the ball, you move it from one arm to the other just to secure it. What is the point where you have possession, right? That's not an easy thing to define. Even with 4K video, guy makes a catch with his hands. It's in his hands. He has it. Brings it in to secure it from defenders, and maybe it moves a little bit in there because you're moving the ball. Well, is that a bobble? That's hard to define even when you're looking at it in super slow motion on video. That is not, to me, 100% indisputable video evidence of a bobble. So in that moment, in that game on Sunday, the ball move a little bit? Sure looked like it. Did he lose possession? Did he not have possession? It looked like he, I mean, we gotta stop breaking this down to such a complicated... The guy made the catch, and he got 2 feet in, and then the third foot was out of bounds. Okay.
What do you think about removing slow-mo and frame by frame and making the officials rewatch it in regular motion and, you know, at regular speed?
Well, I like what Rich said there. If you have the technology at home, we got to have it in the league. If the fan can see it at home, we need to be able to see it in the league office. And that's true. Because they're still going to show those super slow-mo replays on TV. And if they miss something because they don't have that, that's not going to look good. I understand where you're coming from on that. Because I do think, and I think Rich McKay got into it there, that this super slow-mo and 4K video is like actually, even though it's clearer, it's leading to more gray area because we're seeing little things that maybe we didn't see before when things were grainier. And so, again, if we just get back to this 100% clarity on the replay, where if there's any doubt whatsoever, just keep it how it's called. Replay was intended to correct these big-time mistakes that were being made, that were determining outcomes of the game that could easily be fixed by, hey, the fans at home are seeing this on their TV. Why are you not seeing it? That's what we got to get back to, and that's what I hope the league does. So the other play in this game, it was Ertz, right? Zach Ertz. Zach Ertz catches the ball at like the 5, takes 3 steps, lunges for the end zone, loses the ball as he reaches for the end zone. I think he'd actually hit the ground, right? Pops up and he secures it. But the ball did come loose when it hit the ground. This element of time thing is where I think that this is where I think the league has to address it with the rule. Because that's creating this gray area with the replay, too. What is the time element? How do you define it? Because they're not like taking a stopwatch out and going 2 seconds, 3 seconds. That's actual time. They're trying to define it by this arbitrary amount of steps you take with the ball. Like, I honestly don't know if this is in the rule book, but I've heard referees refer to this numerous times. I think Dean Blandino has talked about it both when he was in that job with the NFL and this year with Fox Sports. 3 steps. Getting 3 feet down. It's always been 2 feet to get a catch. But this element of time, I can tell you exactly why Zach Ertz's touchdown stood. Because I pay attention to stuff very, very closely. He caught the ball, took 3 steps before he lost it. That is the qualification, whether it's actually written in the rule book like that or not. That's what they use for you become a runner. That's what they always talk about. You have to become a runner. And once you become a runner, then it's a fumble. It's not incomplete. It's a fumble. So that's why Zach Ertz's touchdown stood. And that was the right call. But again, we watch these games and we see so many of these plays get overturned. That, I mean, Joe, were you sitting there going, oh, I don't know what they're going to call here. Who knows?
Yeah. You know, it's a tough spot. You know, I'm not jealous of these referees and the decisions they have to make, and especially on Super Bowl Sunday when, you know, 150 million people are watching. One thing that's interesting, though, I don't think anybody envisioned this being a thing when we first started replay in any sport, really.
Yeah, no.
You know, everybody thought this is awesome. We're going to get everything right. It's going to be great. And it has just caused more and more confusion in every single sport. Well, I mean, have you seen some of the hockey replays?
Yeah. They can't get the blue line correct ever.
Yeah.
And we're witnessing it in baseball right now. We're witnessing it. It's happening before our eyes. These plays where, you know, in the past, runner touches the bag first and he was safe. Now, with the 4K super slow-mo we see in the World Series, the Fox Vision or whatever they call it, Oop, the hand came off for half a second, and the glove was still on the body. So he's out.
Yeah, it happened in the Cubs-Nats playoff series, where the catcher got dinged for, you know, just barely getting his arm up. And yeah. Is he out by the letter of the law? Sure.
Yeah.
But, I mean, come on. We're talking about, like, just this. And that's not, you know, an anti-Cub thing. That's just the play that makes me furious is in basketball, when the defender knocks the ball out of the offensive player's hands. And technically, the offensive player is the last one to touch the ball. But it never would have gone out of bounds if the guy, if the defender didn't knock it out. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
So 10 years ago, that's out on the defender every 10 times out of 10. But now you got to slow it down and watch it and take 5 minutes.
And the ball rolls off the guy, the offensive player's finger last.
Yeah.
It's still tough for me to justify, you know, to come to a conclusion on some of this stuff. To me, it's kind of a play-by-play, situation-by-situation. But I'm definitely coming back around to this idea of that's not what replay was intended for. At first, you know, even a year ago, I was like, that's an old school mentality. Like, if we're going to have it, let's get everything right. But it's leading to more gray areas. So I think right now baseball and basketball are a different discussion. And we'll keep it here to football and the catch, no catch, because I feel very, very strongly about this at this point. And my solution, at least for the rule, and I don't know that it's going to be perfect. That's why I hope that these owners look at plays over and over again. And there's what people don't understand is the officials actually like this rule. They think it helps them. And I think most times the officials on the field actually get it right. It's where the replay comes in, where they're reversing this stuff and they're creating more confusion. But it is hard for the fan to understand why Dez Bryant's catch in the playoff game a few years ago was ruled incomplete. But by the rule, they made the right call. And ultimately, this comes down to the fan. And you want the fan to be not upset over calls. You want them to understand what's happening on the field. So they need to go back and look at the rule. I would like to strip it all back down and say, catch the ball 2 feet down. If you have possession with 2 feet down, the ball's in your hands, that's a catch at that point. And whatever happens after that, happens. So if you lose it then after that, and you're in the middle of the field, then it's a fumble. If you lose it out of bounds, then it's a catch and it went out of bounds. Now, I realize that probably the unintended consequence is going to be go right back to why they put this, you know, extended this element of time into it. Because he's still going to be like, all right, well, what constitutes that possession in his hands? Like, did he hold on to it for a split second with 2 feet down, or what? Again, I go to the point where the second foot goes down. If the ball's in his hands, that's a catch. Anything that happens after that, let it play out. I think that is a much easier for fans to understand. What I don't know, and we'd have to see, is does that make the replay more confusing? I'm not saying that this is 100% flawless solution, but I am saying that it needs to be a much simpler rule for the fans to understand. Then let's go back. So let's put that in. Then let's see how it plays out with the replay. And I think if we go back to 100%, no question, that's the call, then everyone will be a lot happier and there'll be a lot less controversy.
Would more voices in the replay booth help? Do you think having three guys in there and, you know, the majority vote gets it? I mean, it's not quite the 100 drunks, but I think
But that's the thing. Well, maybe, but it shouldn't be majority. If you're going to have multiple voices, right. They should all be in agreement. And if it's four guys and one disagrees, then you don't overturn it. Maybe that would help get that 100% consensus. Let's take a quick time out here. Pat Fitzgerald joins us next. We can ask him about this. We've seen plenty of this in college football as well. Head coach of the Northwestern Wildcat, Pat Fitzgerald, coming up next on Sports Central.
What?
Yes!
What?
No!
What?
Let me think.
Ooh.
Yeah! Good talk, coach. Thanks.
Maybe we should stick to radio.
He's got a point.
Chicago's sports conversation. This is Sports Central with Adam Hogue.
Back here, Sports Central, WGNRadio.com, WGN Radio app. Busy NBA trade deadline day. Yesterday was sort of our new version of signing day, which kind of really happened a month and a half ago. But that's part of the reason why I wanted to bring Pat Fitzgerald on today, talk about the him finishing up his signing class from this year and also some of the changes that happened this season. What's going on, Coach Fitz?
I'm doing great, Adam. How you doing, my friend?
I am good. So yesterday, you finalized your signing class, and it comes across, and it was two players. And I'm like, that's different, but, you know, it's all expected because we knew that, you know, you guys signed a bunch of players in December, too. But it's just a different feel for early February when you're used to these huge signing classes and these big parties. So I just, how was it different this year from a coaching standpoint and a recruiting standpoint?
Yeah, everything was different. You're right. Signing, you know, 16 guys in December, I think, really took a lot of stress off of, you know, the whole process for the month of January from a standpoint of the 2018 class. But then what that then transpired or how you move forward is now you're going hard after the 2019 and 2020 class. So I was seeing more, getting out to more schools and seeing high school coaches of juniors and sophomores than I was the 2018 class. So very different. We'll see how it plays out as we move forward.
Do you like it so far?
Well, I'm pretty outspoken as a proponent for change. I think our recruiting calendar, the way we go about our business in recruiting, is very antiquated. And, to now have at least some early opportunity, I mean, those 16 young men that we ended up signing, they were all committed before their senior year. Now, most of that cost and all the opportunity for them to come up and see us all were on their families. And, so as we progress and this thing changes, I'm open to change, but it's got to be a benefit to the student athlete, to their families, the high school coaches, and then our assistant coaches before I would sign off on something.
Probably don't have time to go through all 16 players, but what can you tell us about this signing class for you?
Well, maybe a unique thing that maybe some of our fans are interested in would be the five guys that have enrolled early. Greg Newsom and Jeremiah McDonald are both DBs that enrolled early and are going through winter workouts right now. One's a corner, one's a safety. I've been able to watch them now for, a little over a week workout and very impressed with their athleticism. I think both guys are going to have great careers here. Just been really impressed with what they've been getting done. KJ Clee Jones, linebacker, I think these X amount of weeks, months are going to help him from a standpoint of learning the defense, getting prepared to be a Big Ten linebacker. Same thing with Andrew Leota, defensive end. We knew Andrew needed to gain a little bit of weight, but, man, his explosiveness here after watching him for a week is exciting. And then Isaiah Bowser, young man that had just a spectacular career running the football in Ohio. Similar career, not identical, but similar career to what Justin Jackson had here in Illinois a few years back. Guys that are already on campus, but, just a great group. We signed six guys from Chicagoland and really five Chicagoland and then Charlie Mangieri from down in Peoria. So excited about those six local guys and hoping one of them, the big guys, is going to win a state championship on the wrestling mat. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Pat Fitzgerald, head coach, Northwestern, on Sports Central with us right now. I haven't seen you since the bowl game. What's the latest on moving into the new facilities?
Yeah, things are moving forward really well. We are so thankful for that support. We'll be in there for the summer, and things are really progressing great. The pictures, the online videos don't do the facility justice. It's amazing. It's going to be absolutely spectacular for the day-to-day for our student-athletes and obviously help us quite a bit in recruiting, too.
And Dave Enna gets his own office, right?
Yeah, we actually have the Hall of Fame office named for Mr. Cat. And, yeah, I'm sure he and Teddy will be hanging out there way too much.
Hey, speaking of Teddy, I loved his story the other day that he wrote on the analytics and some of the stuff that Doug Peterson called in the Super Bowl Sunday, which looked very similar to a couple of the calls that you had in the Music City Bowl. Right, it always looks different when it works versus when it doesn't. But can you kind of expand on that a little bit, that what really goes into some of those calls that maybe the fans don't understand when they're just watching a game live?
I think, you know, the process of preparing for a game, you know, at our level and at the pro level, the amount of time that goes into everything is astronomical. And, you know, you try to go through every contingency that you possibly could. And sometimes you're right and sometimes you're wrong. But everything is pretty much thought out. Gone are the days when maybe you'd say, oh, he's a riverboat gambler. And the coach would go, yeah, well, I just, you know, the emotion of the game. You really try to remove that entirely and, you know, just use the numbers. We probably look at 50 to 100 data points on every play and just try to play the percentages along with your gut and your instincts and really the flow of the game. So a lot goes into it.
How similar was that play they ran on 4th and 2, I think it was, at the goal line, or 4th and 1, to what you guys ran in the Music City Bowl?
Yeah, there were similarities. Obviously, both had a reverse aspect to it. We were throwing ours to the tight end in the corner. They threw theirs back to the quarterback.
Right.
You know, we've run similar things of that nature. Our fans probably remember the one in the Outback Bowl that we ran a couple of years ago. You know, it's obviously kind of like the firework plays, right? Everybody goes ooh and ah. You know, there's the ooh when it doesn't work, and there's the yeah when it does work. So you got to be aggressive. I think that's the name of our game, but it's got to be calculated. And, you know, I think we're trying to give our guys the best opportunity to win on every single play, and hopefully we'll continue to execute a little bit better as we move forward.
One of the things you've always preached with recruits is the idea of loyalty and how much a verbal commitment really means, and vice versa. You guys have always honored that, too. I've always admired that, just watching the way you guys put together your recruiting classes compared to other programs in the league. I don't know if we can really call any similarities to what just happened in Indianapolis with Josh McDaniels, but I was just curious, as a coach that kind of goes through some of this, just what your reaction was to seeing that unfold.
You know, I was quite surprised, as you can imagine. I think probably like most of the football world was, but you know, I can't pass judgment without knowing details.
Right.
You know, and you know, every circumstance is a little bit different. It's kind of crazy, you know, what we do for a living. It gets broadcast worldwide on a moment-by-moment basis, and that's what we sign up for. But, you know, if a normal fan is going from, you know, AT&T to Verizon, and they decide to back out at the last minute, nobody really says anything. So it just is what it is. You know, I think, number one, for Josh is a colleague. You know, I hope he found what he's looking for and is happy to be there and has got the things that he needs professionally. And, you know, I know Chris Ballard well with the Colts. He's an outstanding, outstanding human being, an outstanding general manager. And knowing him, he's going to go out and find a great coach and get that program and that organization, you know, back to where it was when Andrew was healthy and when Peyton was there. So it's such a fluid deal. And you know, I just hope all goes well for Josh. And I know all will go well for the Colts.
Yeah, I think with Chris Ballard in charge, they'll be okay. But it's been a tough go so far. Obviously, having that happen, you don't expect it. Coach Fitz on with us right now on Sports Central. You know, every year during the football season, these rumors pop up wherever with you and the NFL. I'm just curious how those come and go, if they even do happen once the season ends, and how you handle them if and when they do.
Well, I just speak to the facts. I mean, you know, number one, I think I've proven, my staff has proven with their loyalty, and we're incredibly thankful for the loyalty of the university. I mean, we're not where we want to be as a program. I think we are a consistent winner. That was the goal. I know back when I got recruited in the 90s was to get to this level and then to raise the bar. And we're working tirelessly to raise that bar to become a yearly championship contender. And I think we're starting to get those finishing pieces in place. And a big one's coming this summer, you know, obviously with the new Walter Athletic Complex and Ryan Fieldhouse and Wilson Field. So, next will be Ryan Field. So we're down that road, but I can't control with what other people say. You know, a lot of times, Adam, that stuff is put in the media by other teams for recruiting reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I saw the stuff that happened with Shiano this week, and that I can guarantee you that was put in because of a recruiting battle.
Wow.
You know, sometimes you can control it, and sometimes you can't. But you know, just very thankful to be a Wildcat. You know, I've got a now 9-year-old son, Brendan. I'd love to have the privilege, if he gets good enough grades in high school, to coach that little knucklehead. And, you know, by that point, I think it'll be somebody else's turn to take over the leadership of this great institution. But I've got great respect for those 32 organizations. There's no bigger Bear fan in Chicago than me. You know that. You and I talk about it every time I see you.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just very thankful to have the role that I have at my alma mater, and look forward to getting us to Indianapolis and winning the Big Ten championship for a lot of years.
Well, we of course know your commitment to Northwestern, and know it does not waver. You did mention the Bears. Was there any conversation whatsoever with that job open? Did Ryan Pace give you a phone call?
I texted Ryan, good luck. Yeah, no, not at all. Like I said, there's no bigger Bear fan than me. I mean, I'm in football because at 10 years old, the Bears won the Super Bowl. And I wanted to be Mike Singletary and, you know, Walter Payton and Jim McMahon. I can name them all. I can do the Super Bowl shuffle. I mean, there's no hiding my loyalty. I'm a Bear fan to the core. But I wouldn't be where I'm at today without that Super Bowl team. And I probably wouldn't be here, too, without Coach Dicka. I mean, I don't know if I've ever told you the story, but when I got cut by the Cowboys, I went to try out for the Saints. And they put us through a full NFL combine after, you know, we just weren't training camp. And I got to run a 40, and I think I ran probably like a 6 flat. And I don't know how many times I benched 225. I probably had a negative vertical. And, you know, we get done with a workout, and there was probably 10 guys there. And Coach Dicka puts his arm around me and says, you know, I think it's time you start using that Northwestern degree. And he doesn't say that to me. I probably don't hang it up. I probably keep trying to run around in the football Olympics in shorts. And yeah, I took that to heart. By the time I landed back here in Chicago and got back down to my parents' house in Orland Park, I was done with football playing. And it was time to progress into coaching. So, you know, it's without a doubt in my mind, the Bears are going to get this thing turned around. And I'm fired up for Matt. I think he's going to do a terrific job. Look forward to getting to know him and his staff better. I mean, the Bears have been so great to us. You know, that's how I really got to know Coach Smith really well when Lovie was there. And you know, just looking forward to building that relationship with that new staff. And I was talking to Foxy a couple weeks ago, and I wish him nothing but the best in his future endeavors, too. He's a great guy and a great friend.
Hey, 6 flat. I mean, give yourselves more credit than that. Even Tommy Christian got me on a 5-1 last year. So you have to be faster than that.
Yeah, I don't know. I ran 4.82 on pro timing day.
Okay.
That was the fastest I had ever run a 40. I'm trying to do these, like, the worst non-athletic cartwheels. And these scouts were looking at me like I was crazy, you know. So the game's changed a lot, as we both know now. But there's no way I'd recruit myself now. But, you know, just thankful for what happened for me when I was here, no doubt.
Hey, last thing for you real quick, just because I got to ask you about it. It's the most important position. But any update on Clayton Thorson at all?
Yeah, he's doing terrific, Adam. You know, he had, obviously a prehab cycle before he had surgery. That went great. He goes and has surgery, and, you know, they kind of always, anytime you have any type of surgery, they kind of say, you know, it could go down one of a couple of roads. Here's the worst-case scenario. Here's the middle of the road. Here's the best-case scenario. He had the best-case scenario happen for him, which is obviously incredibly positive. And so far the rehab is is going as well as could be asked for what he's had. So, you know, we're not going to put a timetable on it. I've learned that lesson with other injuries in the past with our guys, and we're just going to let this process unfold. And, you know, I fully anticipate things will go great because that's what we've had so far. And, you know, just very thankful for his mental toughness and his physical toughness. He's led us to a great place and look forward to getting him back on the field. But, man, what an unbelievable opportunity through his adversity for TJ and Aiden and Andrew here this spring. And, you know, Mick and I have now been through a bunch of different quarterback type of situations like this and look forward to watching those three great young men compete.
Yeah, it'll be fun during spring football. And we'll see you there soon. Thanks for taking the time today, Coach.
I appreciate you, buddy. To all of our great Cat fans throughout Chicagoland, go Cats. Thanks.
All right, Pat Fitzgerald joining us here on Sports Central. Appreciate his honesty and being candid about some of that stuff and the update on Clayton Thorson as well. We're kind of out of time here. I still want to hit on a couple things. Real quick, there was a couple. What was the one story here with buried headlines that I wanted to get to? The Cubs thing. The Brewers today announced with a tweet that they're going to have a special pre-sale for all Cubs games at Miller Park this year. But you have to be a Wisconsin resident to participate in the pre-sale. And immediately, because this happened a few years ago with the Blackhawks in the playoffs with the Predators in Nashville, everyone got upset about it. Those were for actual tickets. I mean, that was not a pre-sale. I have absolutely no problem here with what the Brewers are doing. The Brewers are saying, we're putting tickets on sale early for our fans. They're not saying that they're going to shut the Cubs out completely. It's a pre-sale. I tried to buy Justin Timberlake tickets last night. It was only open to American Express card holders and fans of the what does he call it? The Tennessee Kids Fan Club. And you have to pay $25 to join the fan club. So the diehards get access to the tickets early. That's fine. People get so mad about this. And by the way, there's a lot of Cubs fans that live in Wisconsin, too, that can still buy the tickets. This is going to be, at the end of the day, there's going to be plenty of Cubs fans at the game, and you're still going to be able to go. It's not like it's going to sell out, but this just maybe will increase the amount of Brewer fans a little bit, make their fan base happy. Let's see. Jimmy Garoppolo, brand new contract, 5 years, $137.5 million. Guy started 5 games last year for the 49ers. I think he's worth every penny. I'm telling you, I think Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be really, really good. And it's just the way things goes. Kirk Cousins is going to get his contract in a few months. It's going to be worth even more. Aaron Rodgers is going to get his. It's going to be even more than Kirk Cousins. This is how it works in the NFL. Last thing for you. Did you see this? Wide receiver Jacob Copeland. Speaking of recruiting day.
Yeah, I wanted to show you yesterday, but I'm not sure how much it translated to radio.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of have to see the video, but I can still explain what happened. He's doing one of these typical signing day press conferences, put the hats on the table in front of him. His family's all around him. What's really weird, though, is he's got the Florida hat, the Tennessee hat, and the Alabama hat, and half his family's like dressed up in Vols gear. Half of them are dressed up in a Alabama gear. His mom's got an Alabama jacket on, right? Yeah. And a Vols hat. He picks the Gators. She gets up and walks away.
She bails, dude.
His mom walked away as he picks Florida.
And she didn't just walk away. She stood up, walked in front of the table, and stayed, you know, like, with. So she didn't walk out of the shot. She kind of walked in front of the shot, like, to ruin his whole thing. It was awkward, and that was the first question that he got in the interview from ESPN. Who was that?
Yeah. Who just walked off on you?
My mom
did. Come on, people. Let's have some perspective here. Be happy for your children. That just... Bringing that up on the heels of having Pat Fitzgerald on the show... I am so glad to be affiliated with a program that just does not deal with that stuff.
Yeah. Also, it's a clean program. You know, she's probably mad because she has to, you know, pay back Saban. Hey-o.
I mean, that would explain the reaction a little bit better.
Now I got to return this Mercedes?
I mean, Northwestern does it the right way. When you're committed, they stay committed to you. But they say, don't, you know, you're committed to us. You don't go talk to other schools now. And I think that's the right way to do it. All right. We're going to do a curling update. Maybe we'll save that for tomorrow. The Olympics started. I woke up. My kid woke up at 5:30 this morning. I'm like, come on, dude. Why are you awake right now? I'm so tired. And then I turn on TV and curling's on. Excellent. And there's a brother-sister combo from Madison, Wisconsin that is in this new mixed doubles thing. So they started 1-1.
Yep, yep.
I love curling. We're going to have fun with that over the next 2 weeks. Get ready for it. Get ready for the curling updates and the curling tweets. All right, we should get out of here. Went a little long today, but Pat Fitzgerald was great, so we just kept him on. It's a great thing about this streaming show. Can't kick us off. Although I know Brett Jackson wanted to kick us off a few minutes ago. I saw that, Brett. All right. Tomorrow's Friday. We'll wrap up the week. Mark Harmon's going to join us to go over the trade deadline. He'll be with us the entire show. We'll talk about more in the NBA, though, of course. And this is all assuming that the city is not shut down because of snow. I hate snow. I'm so ready for winter to be over already. But be safe out there. Don't be stupid. Don't try driving in the stuff. It's okay. You don't have to get to work on time. Says me. You can tell your boss I told you that. Just don't be dumb out there, people. Stay off of Lakeshore Drive if it gets that crazy. I don't think it's supposed to get that crazy, but... All right. Fun show. Thanks to Mark Carmen, Pat Fitzgerald for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow to wrap up the week. Thanks for listening to Sports Central.